Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Thomas Robert Simpson, a member of the club's member-led arts forum, and your chair this evening. I'm also the artistic director of the Afro Solo Theater Company, opening its 18th annual Afro Solo Arts Festival tonight. Thank you. Which is co-sponsoring this program. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite you to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to the panel. First, I'd like to introduce Brenda Wong Aoki. She's an acclaimed storyteller, performance artist, writer, and co-founder of First Voice. Second, on the end, is Robert Moses. He's a choreographer and founding artistic director of Robert Moses Kin Dance Company. And Wesley Watkins, Dr. Wesley Watkins. He's the founder of the Jazz Democracy Project. It is now my pleasure to introduce our moderator tonight. She is Jacqueline Harrison. Jacqueline is an award-winning ASCAP composer, arranger, pianist, and music educator. Jacqueline Harrison, thank you.
Thank you. And first, I'd like to say welcome to everyone, and we're delighted, at least those of us who are part of this panel here, hopefully we can answer some questions and get you to thinking with regard to what this whole event, what this evening is all about. And if you can't hear, if you'll just hold up a hand or something, because we want to make sure that you hear at least the express answers of the persons who are seated beside me. Speaking of the persons, the fact that we have two males and two females, one of the first questions, of course, it has nothing to do with gender here, but one of the first questions I'm going to ask, just making an observation, because of being an educator, one of the key words that I've always liked to use is cause and effect, impact, etc. And I'm going to start with the word impact. Now, one of the persons on the panel, now all of these panelists are all very well versed, even though one has asked not to be first, so we won't call on him first. But speaking of the word impact, thinking of art, thinking of the word peace, our key focus this evening, when was the first time, and I'm addressing this to each of you, that you had an arts-related experience that might have made an impact on you, or you made an impact on it, or somehow you came to realize the power of art in the experience of that impact? So who would like to be first? I'll see Brenda smiling.
No,
oh, you're
going to
be first?
I can
Brenda,
answer that.
Thank you.
Well, I think I was about maybe 7 or 8. And I grew up on the west side of Long Beach, which is right next to the Wilmington oil refineries and next to the flood control. It's a little urban island that nobody knows people actually live there. Snoop used to play basketball with my brother in the backyard. And all the kids who live there, well, their parents don't really speak English or good English. So you kind of see where we come from. And we heard that the Park and Rec was going to have a play. And everybody's like, well, what is a play? Well, let's go and see. And we went into the crafts room, and it didn't look like the crafts room. They had put all the tables up, and all the benches were in lines, and there was sawdust on the floor. And I remember thinking, well, this is so interesting. Sawdust is on the floor. And then they did some play, and I don't even remember what the play was like, but I remember it had a blue fairy in it. And I just thought she was so magical in her, you know, the blue fairy. And then afterwards, there was this raffle, and I won a doll. And this was my first doll. I grew up with 6 kids in 1 bedroom. We didn't have a lot of money. Those were like extra kind of stuff. And I was the eldest, so I didn't need a doll. So to me, I saw the blue fairy, and, you know, she made my dream come true. I got a doll. And the whole experience was just amazing to me because I'd been in that Park and Rec craft room a lot and never had it transformed like that. And that was kind of my first time.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And for our listening audience, that was Brenda Wong Aoki speaking. As each of you answers or shares your opinion, would you say your name so our audience will know who they're listening to?
Okay, so I'll go next. Again, my name is Wes Watkins, and I run the Jazz and Democracy Project. When I was reflecting on this question earlier, what came to me was a day that I was in church, and my mom started going to Love Center Ministries, which was the late, great Bishop Walter Hawkins was the pastor there. And she, I was in college at the time, and she said, Wes, you have to come with me to this church because I literally cannot hear the harmonies that they're singing. My mother grew up in like a Catholic school choir, and she said, I can't hear the sound, but it's the most magnificent sound I've ever heard, right? So I started going to this church, and I remember being there one Sunday morning, and I may be stretching this idea of peace here just a little bit, but for me, for who I was at that time, having been an African-American student at a predominantly white high school in San Francisco, and then one of relatively few African-American students at Stanford University, I sat there one Sunday and thought, oh, these people are geniuses. Like, these musicians are geniuses, because I've watched people start singing and someone get on the piano and follow that person like they had rehearsed it for years, right? I watched someone watch another piano player who was directing and singing and playing piano. Then the spirit got good to her, so she had to get up from the piano and do her thing, and this guy just sat down and played exactly what she was playing. And I was like, that's genius. And for me, again, who I was at that time, that was a peaceful moment for me to know that, wow, African-American people have genius, right? That was peace for me. Then the other aspect of it, too, is if you're a believer, you watch, and specifically at this church, you watch music heal people.
Mm.
Period. Mm-hmm. Enough said.
Thank you. You didn't mention your own singing voice in the process.
Well,
I'm sure our audience
it's not worth
heard
mentioning,
this
trust
voice.
Me.
Robert Moses. And, you know, it's hard for me to pin it down. I think when I was very small, my mother got me an organ, and I tried to play that a little bit. It didn't work for me. And a little later, there was a program I grew up in North Philadelphia, and at Temple University, which is in our neighborhood, there was a program, an arts program for underserved youth in the neighborhood. And I wound up in a visual arts program when I was about 12 at Temple University, and that didn't work for me. And then in high school, I did a little bit of acting, and that didn't work for me. And so I think in relation to the arts, there was a quest. There was something that my mother saw and that she sort of pushed me towards. And there was something that I felt that I did not know how to pin down. And then when I got to college, I wound up in the dance. There was a teacher said, you know, you should work with this particular student because I think she really has a lot of talent. And I worked with this student. Maybe she was a year older than I was, and she made a solo on me. And I remember distinctly leaving my body and watching myself dance, and it was the most mm-hmm. peaceful moment I had had in my life to that point. And I won't say I've been chasing that moment ever since, but I have a realization of what peace is for me mm-hmm. from that moment. And I don't think it's sort of ever the same thing twice. But if I can't tell you what my first experience was, because I think there were a number of things that I was running towards, but I can tell you that that was the most pointed moment in my life to that point.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Have you put that expression in writing yet? Have you written about it, that experience?
No, I've not. It's a funny thing. I am a performer, but I'm fairly private person. So there are some things that I generally don't communicate unless I'm directly asked about them, which is sort of what happened here. Wow. But it's out there now. and maybe on the radio.
Well, thank you for communicating that. Speaking of, before we go further with the next question or possibility of questions, I'd like to share also, speaking of when you think in terms of, even if you were to reflect on the novel that was War and Peace, in so many instances where there's a reference to war and peace, peace being the opposite of war, or war being the opposite of peace. I can think of an instance where, for instance, there might be war within individuals. I had an experience, and of course Paula, who was one of my good music friends here in the audience, this might have been before I knew Paula, but I remember we were getting ready to have a rehearsal, and a gentleman came to the rehearsal furious, just angry. And as people tried to approach me, "Don't touch me." And I thought, well, what's going on? And he didn't want anyone near him. And you could just see the frown on his face and the scowling look. And so people stayed away from him. Well, the bass player, and this was an upright bass player, walked up with his bass and just started strumming. Doom. Doom, very soft and subtle. These, and no melody, but just striking these strings in a very tranquil manner. All of us looked at the gentleman who was angry. The whole face changed. And in about 5 minutes, he said, "Did anyone say anything to me? Anyone? Oh, I'll be happy to talk to whomever." I mean, just overnight. So that was an instance when I thought of, you know, the expression, the music does have charms to soothe the savage beast. He was certainly soothed at that point. So thank you for mentioning the word healing, whosoever mentioned that. Well, let's see. We have another question here. Can you think of a work of art? Now, since, let's see, we have the representation of dance here and music, and I think Mr. Wesley represents several elements with regard to his representation. But is there a work of art in your field that directly or indirectly relates to or promotes just the concept of peace? Whosoever shall speak.
Well, this is Brenda Wong Aoki again. And my work, I'm a writer and a performer, and I guess at its very base, I'm a storyteller. I studied Noan Kyogen, but Noan Kyogen, if you take it to its roots, actually in Japan, if you take theater to its root, it's all about Shintoism and the priestesses, the wandering women way before anything who would wander the countryside and tell stories. They were often very political. They had to tell their stories and run. Their stories were to uphold the common people, you know, to talk about things that they were suffering. And I'm very fascinated with that period of time of the storyteller. And all through history, all human beings have always used story to pass on history. And the thing about storytellers is you don't just use the word. You use images, you use movement, you use music. Throughout the world, it always seems that stories are done with a string, with a stringed instrument, like angels have the harp. Griots, they perform with the koro. In Japan, you perform with biwa oshi, you perform with the biwa and the word. And the thing is, the word is intellectual, but if you want it to go to where it's important, you need to have music. And also there's movement, because when you're talking like this, or when you're talking like this, and you can't see it on the radio, but you're saying so many different things. So it's multi-disc. We were multi-disc long before we were all divided up. And I think this is really important. This is how we actually remember things. Because there are still people on this earth whose cultures go back tens of thousands of years. That's way past the time rocks with hieroglyphics would be able to exist. Our history is in the performing arts. I really believe that.
Thank you.
I don't know if I answered your question, but
and I see Mr. Moses is thinking.
Well, I don't
say your name.
I
don't know. Please.
I mean, I think a lot of A lot of artists try to work with the notion of peace through political work in some ways. And I think we attach our aspirations to works of art that aren't explicit in that way. And it just, what comes to mind right now is the, a couple of years ago, the poster of Obama, the multicolored poster of Obama that said hope on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that got to be such a popular mm-hmm. icon because at the point that that happened and the aspiration we had for who this man might be and what he might represent sort of across the board, there was a lot of attachment to that notion of hope, which was ideally something that was going to tether itself to peace in some way. And we tethered ourselves, some of us tethered ourselves to the notion of that man because there was an idea that he in some ways tethered to the notion of another man whose life was dedicated to peace. And so I think regardless of what a work may intend to do, it sometimes moves us in that direction, mm-hmm. Whether it's dance or theater or music or whatever. Hopefully that was clear.
Well, now, Mr. Moses, as a choreographer, have you yourself choreographed yourself as an image of peace?
I haven't worked with the idea of peace per se, mm-hmm. because that's, I think you have to sort of capture that mm-hmm. as something you have to sort of go after and make happen. You know, and sometimes you can surrender yourself to something, mm-hmm. and it can be there, as I mentioned earlier. But I've worked with other notions. I've worked with the notion of hate and mm-hmm. why it is that we say that we don't, that it doesn't belong in our lives, but we keep it around like it's, you know, yes. it's our best friend, mm-hmm. you know. And it just, it stays right there with us. Mm-hmm. And so we've looked at that, you know, and sometimes by looking at the other, you're able to get closer to something that you may really want to be closer to. I've looked at the notion of loss. There's a piece called Speaking Ill of the Dead, which is seen as an anti-war piece that we do. And it's really about loss. And at the end of the piece, ideally, you find yourself in a place where you just say, you know, it's doesn't make sense for these things to go on in the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I, not specifically with the notion of peace, because sometimes, as I say, you have to go after that thing, and sometimes you surrender yourself to it. But going after something that's as evasive, as you know, so if peace were a ball player, right? It would be, or if it were a ball, it wouldn't be the ball player, it'd be a loose ball because everybody's chasing it. Mm-hmm. Because it just is, it's a tough thing to get. And then we all get after it and we get it and then we say, you know, this is what it is, this is ours, mm-hmm. this is our piece, I believe in it this way, mm-hmm. this is mine. Mm-hmm. And your idea of it, it's not as important as my idea of it.
Thank you.
I'm sure that makes sense.
And I'm going to call on, I see Dr. Wesley about to say something.
So when I was thinking about this, I put the word peace in my iTunes just to see what songs would come up. And a number came up. I was glad to say. Peace, Peace by Bill Evans and a number of others. But then I just thought that was kind of cheesy way to go about it. So I just thought about it for a second. What songs come to mind when I think about peace? And the song that came to mind was Alabama by John Coltrane.
Mm.
The word I got on that song was that he composed the song, certainly, I don't know if it was just the melody or if he brought this entire thing, which I'm about to say, to the entire work, but the word that I got was the song is based on, I think we can say the cadence or maybe the vibe of Martin Luther King's eulogy for the four girls who died in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. But you listen to the song and you hear that, you hear the church bombing, and then you hear solace, mm-hmm. right? So as I think about bringing peace to a situation, right, there's a number of ways people could have responded to four little girls dying in a church bombing, right? Mm-hmm. King went one way, and Coltrane went with him, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked it up. So the eulogy was on September 18th, and Coltrane performed Alabama a few weeks later, October 8th, on the Live at Birdland recording. Heavy stuff. Check it out.
I think that notion of sort of a counterpoint of peace to some other experience is really important, because that's how we find out what peace is.
Yeah. Yes.
And when you, I mean, when you're
in the face of,
in the what it is in the face of. So, you know, another, just talking about music, another piece that I think is wonderful is Bill Withers, who was talk about storytelling.
Yeah.
Bill Withers, I Can't Write Left-Handed.
It's
amazing piece. He tells the story of a man who's come back from war, and this notion of solace, this notion of what's of loss, of what's not there, and the senselessness of it not being, he's lost his left arm in the war.
Right.
He can't hug his family in the same way. There's so many things that are sort of going on there, and you feel the absence of peace in that song.
But I think also at the same time, we have the blues aesthetic, right? We have we sing the blues to get rid of the blues.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So there's a piece in the performance about the anguish.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's the call and response of that African American tradition.
That duality is there.
Right.
But
the coexistence even.
The coexistence is there. The coexistence, the duality is there, but you won't I don't think we can quite put our finger on the thing. And the reason the call and response is there is because we need to be able to recall what it is that we've experienced that makes us want to call for.
Well, I think what all this stuff does is it. This
and,
is Brenda.
And Brenda, identify yourself again.
Brenda. This is Brenda. I think what all this does is it sort of turns on the human empathy faucet, because I believe people at their hearts are good, but they don't know. And so if you present what's actually happening, people can empathize. And once you empathize, once you've been there, you know, you realize, but by the grace of God, there go I, right? We were at the Adelaide International Festival at the when it was curated by Peter Sellers, and this was sort of the platform for the Aboriginal movement, the Aboriginal civil rights movement. This is the first time Rabbit Proof Fence came out, and it's the first time the Aborigines talked about Britain dropping a bomb on them, and there's like all these things that people didn't know. So it was this huge time of the writers and the filmmakers and the theater people telling their story. And it was telling it to basically a wide audience in Australia, and the international audience, international festival. But it was done in a way that this is my story, and done with so much pain and so much this is just my truth, that I think it promoted peace because it turned on the empathy faucets, which are, you know, we're having kind of a drought there.
Remarkable. And, you know, hearing the comments, for instance, mentioning Bill Evans, Bill Withers, the whole foundation of jazz itself has quite a bit to do with whether you think in terms of increments of peace or war against peace, so to speak. We can think in terms of foundations, such as the field of jazz, you know, one of our first art forms here. Mm-hmm. And so, Dr. Wesley, I really expect you to really push that point about the jazz, since you are
the
founder. Thank you so much. I'm going to ask also the panelists to help me to identify something. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm so sorry I left at home. There's a poster of an outstanding image display, if I can use that terminology right now. There's a gentleman in West Oakland who I think is a native. He's not African-American, but he has created this sculpture of 25 humanitarians, mammoth, just larger than life, that's supposed to be displayed September the 11th, on the anniversary of September the 11th.
Mm.
And if you have not seen it or heard about it, please go online, Google The title is Remember Them. And anyone you can think of who was a massive contribution to peace is included. Of course, there's Gandhi, Martin Luther King, of course, I'm trying to think of the peacemaker, the woman who helped me.
Teresa.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. And anyone you can possibly think of, and I think there's out of the adults that are pictured in this this massive collection of 25 people, and they're all sort of glued together. There's one little girl, and that one little girl represents I believe when they had the, going back to segregation, one of the little girls that was part of the Nine.
Little Rock Nine.
And her image is part of that too, but it's the most remarkable thing I've ever seen, and I certainly encourage all of you to try to know about it, hear about it, and I was hoping someone on the panel could help me to identify the creator of this. Maybe it'll come to us later, but it's just a remarkable piece, and it's supposed to be on major display on September the 11th, so be on the watch out for it. And the place it's supposed to appear is that downtown park, the newer part of downtown Oakland. I'm trying to think of the name. I see someone shaking her head. Maybe she can help us with the name of that park, that special park. And she said she'll get back to us with the name of that park. But it's the newer part of downtown Oakland that's being renovated. And it's supposed to be on a massive display there. And I'm sure Paula, who's quite a researcher, will find out who this is, too, what this is. Thank you. No. Closer to, if you can envision where Sears is, that park, that whole area. Yeah, Uptown. Thank you, Uptown. So it's supposed to be on display there, so really be on the watch out for it.
You know, Jackie,
yes.
Talking about, you know, pieces that promote peace, I just felt inspired to, this is Brenda again, to tell you about something that happened that's just everyday kind of performance that is just not like, you know, theatrical or professional, but just everyday. Mm-hmm. My husband and I, we've been living in the Fillmore District for the last 30 years, and so during that time there's been a lot of changes. And early on, there was a lot of gang fighting and drugs on our block, and one of our neighbors was this young high school girl who got killed, and we went to the funeral. Now, our block is mainly African-American, and there are two Japanese families on the block, because in the Fillmore, it was long time ago, was African-American and Japanese, and we're the last Japanese still there. Well, we go to this this little bitty storefront church, and everybody's crying because this young girl, you know, is such a tragedy. And her aunt stands up, and they got this crickety organ that's just, like, all out of tune, and somebody's just playing. The aunt is so upset. She sings this song, and it was all off-key because she didn't wait to find out what her pitch was. And she's just, you know, just pouring her soul into it. And I tell you, it's one of the most profound, incredible performances I have ever seen in my life. It was so beyond anything you could see at Davies Symphony Hall or anything. It was out of tune. She was not remembering the words, but she was singing to this girl. And talk about peace. You know, things got very peaceful there after that funeral. People were like, no, we can't be doing this.
Yes. Wow. Now, see, had I been on the scene at the time, I would have run with a tape recorder and said, now sing one more time. Just sing that one more time. You know, recreate it for us, you know. And we're not worried about the pitch of whatever. You know, it's the sincerity of it and the message.
Thank you.
So you didn't record it at the time.
No, I didn't. I just cried.
That was wonderful. But thank you for sharing that. And speaking of the role of peace, once again, I'm sure it has filtered into each of your lives in one way or another. So other than what you've mentioned, can you think of another way that peace has some form of fashion just kind of seep through very innocently but very poignantly? Moses. The one who had the out-of-body experience should be able to conjure up this.
I've had that experience at least twice, maybe three times. It's
really?
A little elusive. I think in being an artist, you in some ways create yourself. You build yourself. and there's a kind of confidence that you're going to get to a place that is, and this is the wrong word, not where you're going to be complete, but where you're going to be enough for yourself. And I'm not, and that's not to say that you're not enough now, but it's just to say that there's always more. And part of being an artist is continuing to complete yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that that is almost like meditation, going into the studio and working on something or working at something that you love to do that is moving you forward. And there is a peace in that 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 is not sort of a what I'm trying to avoid is a sort of a generic notion of peace. What does that mean? It's, you know, it's the, peace is not the saying is that peace is not the absence of war. I think that's the saying, and it's more than just not being that. It's a not a lot of other things. It is the ability to create yourself, which a lot of us want, I think, to do in life. And if Jack Miles, if anyone read the Jack Miles's biography of God, and that whole notion that the reason that the world is sort of developed in its ways because God is trying to discover God's self. God is sort of writing himself or herself into who he's going to be fully. And I think that we do that to a certain extent, that we're sort of moving after that thing. So when I say capture peace, I mean build the peace of yourself. And then if you do that, you're able to bring it into the world. Now, that's not to say that I'm a pacifist. If I run into something, because I'm not, if I run into something and I have to fight for it, however I need to fight for it, then I'm going to do that. But ideally in doing that, I'm not losing myself, and I don't go too far. I don't take too many steps back on the road to completion.
Okay. Thank you. And I think Mr. Thomas Simpson must have personal researchers in the audience, because what I was telling about this massive monument of these 24 characters, his private personal researcher went out and found the information and brought it back to us. So we want to certainly extend a vote of thanks to her. But, and I, you know what, so it's so funny, Brenda, with your name, Aoki, and I was thinking this person's name who created it, I was thinking it kind of rhymes with it, but his name is, it doesn't quite rhyme, but it kind of came to mind, Mario Kyoto. Kyoto is his name. And he's donating this sculpture. And when I went by to see it, there were students in there helping. And, of course, you know, the ladders are miles high because these statues are so high. In order for them to, you know, they're still hammering and trying to finish it. And they were about to add a bronze covering to it. But anyway, thanks to the researcher, our private researcher here, is to be placed in the new Henry Kaiser Sculpture Park in Fox Square. That's the new downtown Oakland, we said uptown, Oakland development. Four-piece sculpture, 22 feet, now see if you can use your imagination, 22 feet wide by 21 feet high, covering 1,000 square feet. 60,000 pounds of bronze is used to cover this. And so Mario Kyoto is the absolute founder and creator of this. And it says that the visually impaired feature of the educational monument is a first of its kind. And I think they're carrying students from all over the Bay Area to see it, because it is an educational piece to see, allowing the visually impaired as well to touch and feel the faces, imagine this, of the 25 world figures. And he claimed, he named these people as humanitarians because of their offerings of peace, with humanitarian quotes also in Braille. So, you know, it's just like it's for everybody. This Remember Them educational monument is designed on a spiraling axis emulating the helix of the common DNA of all humans. Imagine that. Wow. The base will include sculptures of books to illustrate the importance of education in the lives and works of all of the honorees. The base will also feature seven sets of interlocking men and women. That's what I couldn't describe when I told you it looks like they were all stuck together. interlocking men and women, symbolizing the seven continents of the earth. The National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, will have a casting of the educational monument on display in their museum. So may we thank the researcher for bringing this in for us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Jackie, I had a little anecdote about, except Wes, did you have something to say? This is Brenda again. I wanted to tell you this anecdote about when peace kind of worked in my work. First of all, I think that trouble with peace is that we haven't really identified it. Mm-hmm. Some people think of it as I think in our collective unconsciousness, sometimes people think of it as stasis. Who wants to just not move, right? And then we think, maybe peace means that everybody will get the same thing. Isn't that communism, and didn't that not work? And so there's like all this stuff is, what is peace? And for me, I like to think about maybe Taoism, in which if things are right, it's like a river that's flowing. When things are not right, it's like a stagnant pond. And I wanted to tell you about, I was working with Robbie McCulley. She's an African-American writer and performer from New York City. And Robbie and I were in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was there to work with the Vietnamese community, because the people there didn't kind of know that there's a difference between Japanese and Vietnamese, but that's okay. But I was so I was working with the Vietnamese community, and Robbie was working with the African-American community. Now, these people hate each other. They were living in the same at this time. They were living in the same housing development, and there was all this stuff going on. And Jackie had come back to the hotel, and she'd go, Brenda, this is really bad, you know, what they're saying about the Vietnamese. And I said, well, Jackie, I mean, it's really bad. Robbie, it's really bad what they're saying about the African-American community. And so this went on. We were there in residence for about 2 weeks. Finally, I said, there's going to be, like, a warfare pretty soon. We should do something. And we said, well, how about our final culminating potluck? We just have it the same place. And so our culminating potluck, we didn't tell the other people that we were bringing the Vietnamese and that Robbie was bringing the African-Americans. So when everybody came together, there was this, like, stricken look of horror, and everybody kind of went to their corners. And then one of the Vietnamese people started to speak in Vietnamese badly about the African-American community. And the leader of the African-American community shouted back in Vietnamese at this guy. Turns out that he was from Vietnam, and he had learned the language. And the guy who had talked about him was shocked. And so then they started to yell at each other in Vietnamese. Mm. And we didn't know what was going on. And then pretty soon, the African-American guy starts to cry, and then pretty soon the Vietnamese guy starts to cry, and pretty soon everybody's talking, and it turns out that there was this whole thing about it was war, and we didn't know, and why are we doing it again here, and we're in the same housing project, and why don't we just try and work together so that instead of, you know, trying to get, you know, you guys are getting the nice rooms, or why don't we just ask the housing development people to get us all, like, better rooms? And anyway, me and Robbie left feeling like we had done our job just by being artists in residence in this community.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. When we think about art as a motive of creating peace within ourselves, when you think about war within individuals, that, and I'm so happy that we have an audience here that no one has war within themselves, because we can look at their faces and see that they are the expressions of peace and peacefulness. And we are very indebted to Mr. Simpson for bringing us this specific audience, because they all are representatives of peace. Thank you so much, Mr. Simpson. I did want to share, and I know we will have some questions from our audience. When you think in terms, every time I think about children who have a show and tell, mm-hmm. And I'm kind of a show and tell individual. And for those of you who don't know, this is Jackie, the moderator, talking. Alice Walker, who's a dear friend of mine, wrote this book. And look at this title. Can you see that? Why War is Never a Good Idea. Mm-hmm. And when she gave me a copy of it for children, I thought, oh, this is remarkable. And I told her, I said, Alice, if I have your permission, I'd like to write a song, a children's song, that will kind of be emblematic of why war is not a good idea. And then I said, well, let's see, I need to come up with some titles. Or either I need to speak with some children, because children are very creative and imaginative. And I thought, well, what about something like Peace is the Answer? A piece is the good idea. And maybe our panelists can help to think of things, too, because if we have a composer here, an orchestrator, and also the Jazz Foundation up here, and a dancer, you know, we can just do it an all-in-one and have a choreographer around the whole situation. So I'm just very happy that we have forces here that are work to bring peace within this nation. This is a nation within. And Mr. Simpson, you have some questions here that some of our persons would like answered. Okay, thank you very much. And Mrs. Simpson.
Yes, thank you very, very much. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Thomas Robert Simpson for the Member-Led Arts Forum. You are listening to a panel in association with the Afro Solar Arts Festival on the role the arts have played in promoting peace. Panelists, yes, we do have a few questions.
So why don't we start with, since I have a pile here in front of me, Mr. Moses over there. Thank you. I get to share. Thank you. I get to share. Pass down. I get to share. Now, I'm hoping we
can ask them.
Oh, okay. We can ask. Thank you. So thank you, Mr. Simpson. It's nice to have corroboration of
sure.
what should
and
be
the
done.
Others deal primarily with the others and what they specifically do. That's why the questions went to them specifically.
Excellent. All right. It seems that here's one of the questions for one of our speakers today. It seems that we live in a culture of fear. Ooh, key word, fear. And not having enough. The words of peace the words of peace that I've heard here are empathy. Empathy and feeling. Also unity. So the question is, how can the arts break through fear? And I stress it, how can the arts break through fear and cultivate empathy and unity? It seems that people are too busy to slow down and listen.
Okay, I'll jump in there because that hits me on a couple of different points, and I can answer the two questions I have in front of me, which are asking specifically about the Jazz and Democracy Project. So again, this is Wes Watkins for the listeners on the radio. I run the Jazz and Democracy Project. You can find out more about the program at jazzanddemocracy.com. So it's funny. So the word unity jumped out at me there, as well as listening. Two of the major things in jazz, right? If you ask 10 jazz musicians what's the most important thing about being a jazz musician, I'm willing to bet at least 7 or 8 are going to say listening.
Wow.
Nobody wants to be in a band with somebody who's not listening, right? really, no one wants to do anything with someone who's not listening, right? So, and that gets to the point about how I do the Jazz and Democracy Project, right? So I use jazz as a model for democracy. I use the good jazz musician as a model for the good citizen, right? So luckily for me, not too long ago, Michelle Obama had an event at the White House where she said, there's no better example of democracy than a jazz ensemble. If she's right, and if people like Wynton Marsalis are right, and a bunch of other people who have written on this topic, then I think that if jazz is a good metaphor for democracy, then again, the good jazz musician is the model for a good citizen. So what I do is I teach kids what makes a jazz musician good, right? What is a good jazz musician up to when they're in the midst of performing great art in that field, right? So the word unity for me, when I think of the word unity in jazz, I think of the Ahmad Jamal Trio. If you've never seen the Ahmad Jamal Trio, do not miss him the next time he comes to town, which I think might be the SF Jazz Festival this fall. Do not miss the Ahmad Jamal Trio. You will have never seen musicians breathe together quite like this. They take turns out of nowhere, it seems, all together, right? So there's a unity there. There's a togetherness there. When I'm teaching J&D to fifth graders, the word teamwork seems to work, right? They know the idea of teamwork. They know about that from the playground and PE class. But we're talking about listening and responding to people on a very human level. And so for me, the way that I think the reason I'm on this panel, right, is because I use the art of jazz as a model for, again, how we can behave as citizens in this country. And in within that model is the idea of peaceful negotiation. What jazz musicians are doing on stage is no less complicated or fraught with difficulty than the types of interactions we have with people every day, or that our government has with itself currently. Right? Like literally today. Yet jazz musicians peacefully negotiate things a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of that is down to the number of people involved, right? A quartet's going to have an easier time doing something than the Senate. Just on sheer numbers, before we even get to politics. You know what I mean? But again, for me, I find it a useful model to have kids think about, how would this look if we wanted to do it like a good jazz musician would do it? So I'm having them use their minds in this elastic way to go between America's greatest artistic contribution to the world, which is jazz, and how do we behave with each other as citizens in a democracy? So I hope that answers all types of questions.
Any other panelists want to comment on that before we go to the next question?
I wanted to say
Brenda,
that,
yes.
This is Brenda. I'm the founder of me and my husband, Mark Izu, who's in the audience. Our organization is called First Voice. And Mark is a jazz musician, a jazz composer. And one thing, we were performing in New Orleans, and we were doing this duet for soloist and double bass called Uncle Gunjil's Girlfriend, which is about the first white Caucasian Japanese marriage in San Francisco in the turn of the last century. But we were being sponsored by this civil rights people in New Orleans, people in their 70s, 80s. And after the performance, they had a Q&A with the audience, and they only let people speak if they would speak in first voice. And I think that is one of the ways to promote peace, because when you speak from your own personal experience, I experienced this. This happened to me. It transcends race and class and ethnicity. There's no denying it. It happened to you. It's your truth. And in that way, you can kind of get through a lot of barriers and get to the heart of matters. And then I think then there can be peace. So like First Voice, speaking in First Voice.
Thank you so much.
I think it was covered.
Okay. And the next question. Imagine if the USA government had a...
Department of Peace.
Oh, thank you. Nice to have good eyes next to you.
Good glass.
Imagine if the U.S. government had a Department of Peace. How would you like to imagine the role of the arts in that department?
Oh, wow. This is Robert Moses speaking, and I really don't want the government in the business of...
That's true.
We all be Stepford wives.
managing my idea of peace. I think I've said it in different ways, but I think we all sort of have to come to it in a way that really makes sense for us. I mean, the idea is nice. The idea that there's some energy around it, and that there's some sort of consensus around the idea of us really moving toward it with effort. But I'm not comfortable with that.
You know, the country of Bhutan, this is Brenda, they used to have this gross national happiness. That was a measure of their nation's solidity. If they had high gross national happiness, the country was doing well. And I think, you know, in Indian Ayurvedic philosophy, they believe that each of our incarnations, we need to experience 9 emotions. and that this is how our souls experience the world through these nine emotions. And I look at the way we live, and there's our emotions are so truncated. There's sort of rage and fear and very few things. And happiness, delight, joy, those are almost embarrassing things to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things we need to have, make those things important.
Thank you. Maybe that should be written up in a document, huh?
This is Dr. West again. That's what my students call me, by the way. I don't think I said that earlier. I don't often refer to myself as Dr. West. I hear what Mr. Moses is saying, but I think I'd like to see us give it a shot at the government level. Just because in the end, government is made up of a bunch of people, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I would like to see the challenge if there was a Department of Peace. I don't pretend to know what that would look like per se. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think the reason why this panel is assembled, I mean, the arts would be the vehicle.
Yes.
Right? It could be certainly a vehicle for trying to explain in as many ways as we could imagine using all the arts, which of course includes writing, right? Mm-hmm. Ways that you could have people connect with the idea of peace, right? So, you know, the way that I do the Jazz and Democracy Project, you know, I want kids to see how jazz musicians have conflict and sort it out real, real quick. Mm. And nobody got hurt. And it didn't even, some people may have been angry, and, you know, jazz musicians do things outside of the music which are not peaceful at all, right? I'm very clear that I'm talking about in the moment of the music making. And there are even stories about moments on stage when cymbals went flying and whatnot. But again, good jazz musicians, ideally, I think the arts could be, I think the arts and any, what do I want to say? We don't want to limit the number of things that students are exposed to. Mm-hmm. Why would you limit a student's exposure? And if we're going to have this imaginary for the moment Department of Peace, you would want that idea to be out in as many ways as possible, because different people glom on to different representations. That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm going to respond to that, because I'm going to stick by what I'm saying, because government isn't the people. Government is government. And government ultimately, in a lot of ways, winds up being ideas that are pushed. It may be the people's aspirations condensed into someone who's a representative. And then that we're seeing what's happening now when that representative goes to Washington, and then there are, you have people who are either purists and absolutists and people who will compromise everything that they stand for, mm-hmm. and everything in between. So it's a little frightening for something to me, something as sort of as important as that to be managed by someone else. I mean, you know, it's a hypothetical. And then the other thing I want to make sure that we at least give a little attention to is that, you know, you said government is people. Well, the arts are essentially generated by people as well. And it's not always benign. It's not always for the good. The sure. art has been used to do, to support some pretty horrible things as well. So what we need to remember that we're all human beings, and that the things that we do and the things that we push forward can be twisted in some ways that we can't control. And in the current environment, it can happen immediately. Right. If something goes up and you've got people who are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to have it reshaped into the way they want you to think about it by 6 o'clock when you go home to watch whatever your news channel is. So we just want to make sure that you want to put the weight on something that can bear the weight. So it really is, I mean, the art is important because the art can move people to do the thing, but the art isn't the thing that does the thing. Mm-hmm. The people are it's the people that do it. You know, people move the world. People make the government accountable and create things like jazz and democracy and walk into a room and say, okay, I'm going to mess with y'all. You don't like them, and they don't like you, so y'all need to talk. Everybody cries.
Right. All right, thank you very much. This is Thomas Robert Simpson with the Afro Soul Theater Company and the chair tonight. Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's time for one last question.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Simpson. I'm going to ask the person that has the more lucid glasses to help me to read this one, please.
How, through your various genres of art, are you attempting to bring more peace or healing to the young people in inner cities and troubled folks in general as artists? And secondly, is this a priority for you?
I can maybe say something. Brenda. This is Brenda. I just came back from being an artist in residence at the California State Summer School for the Arts, which is young high school kids from all over California, every race, every economic group. And what I did, because I was a multidisciplinary artist, I work with both the writers and the dancers and the theater artists, and I was working cross discipline. I was trying to teach a new kind of literacy, a literacy of reading not just words, but reading body language, reading tone of voice. I think it's going to be very important to start reading these things. We're so used to putting shutters on, oh, look, there's another homeless person. Oh, that person looks really stressed out. I don't want to look. But I think it's really important to have this kind of literacy and to understand it and see it and for children to be able to use it. One of the things I did with some of the kids from the inner city was teach some movement from Noan Kyogen that had like this movement, which you can't see on the radio, means heart, and this means goodbye. And I had some of the kids talk about I had some of the kids talk about people who had died in their lives, friends who had died, and use these movements to say it instead of the words.
On that note, I believe we need to thank all our different panelists, Robert Moses, Brenda Long-Alpe, Dr. Wesley Watkins, and our moderator, Jackie Harrison. Thank you very, very much. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 108th year of enlightened discussions, is adjourned.